Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
You know what? Brad Pitt, you're a good actor. You're a movie star. You're more of a movie star than a great actor. And that's okay, because you're in really good movies and I enjoy them.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
And as long as that ends up being the case, hey, Bishop, I'm still on the radio.
No, it's all right. He can hang.
Paw Patrol.
I need another Paw Patrol.
Okay, I'm going to come turn it on in just a couple of moments, all right?
Big Ann Herron.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
With Bernstein and Holmes on the Score.
Yeah, I think we got to update that for this season, because now Bishop walks in. He's like, Dad, Paw Patrol, now. Okay, I'll put it right on. Anthony Herron is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Plumbing Emergency. Call the plumbing professionals. Available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911.
Did you see this man on TV yesterday? Looking cleaner than the Board of Health? Looking open casket clean.
He always looks like that. Wow, I've never heard that phrase before.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and also you can hear him with the post on the Score, and you get a chance to digest it. It's always nice when you do that shift, and people are starting to kind of like take their breath a little bit and understand that we can come off some of our insanity, and then we rev it all back up for Monday. Yeah. So they got the win. And in this league, you had to count that one, whatever your Bears win total was, that had to be one of them. But boy, the first half made us confront some things. And I guess, Anthony, I'm trying to reconcile the bad with the good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the calibration, just figuring out what is the balance, because there's so much hope for Caleb to become a great QB and the potential for him to be an all-time great QB and a lot of the bluster to a certain extent that's associated with that, while at the same time him being a rookie and making his first start and having this roster that's been enhanced over the last couple of seasons, especially this last offseason, in a way where the expectations are for the Bears to win now. And so how are those expectations calibrated? How is this victory that the Bears have in their opening game of the season, where you see the defense come out with an enhanced sort of execution in the second half. You see special teams dominate the game, and you see an offense that you know there's requisite playmakers there where the offense should improve throughout the season, but the quarterback looks like a rookie, and a lot of folks are hoping the quarterback wasn't going to look like a rookie in this first game. So it was interesting on the post to sort of hear a responsible sort of approach that Bears fans were taking with me yesterday evening in their evaluation of what they saw yesterday. So I think after one game, that's certainly fair. I wonder how long that part is going to end up lasting here, because there's been certain seasons where it's been easy to say, all right, it's just about the quarterback. Does the guy look great or not? We'll figure it out in the years to come. This season ain't that. This season is the team is supposed to win, and you want to know if the quarterback is going to be great too. So it's an interesting dichotomy. As much as we've been through this QB development sort of observation for a number of years at this point, this season is different in that regard.
What did Tennessee do to make it so that the Bears' pass game wasn't effective?
Well, so Denard Wilson has been a defensive coordinator, and his style as a DB coach and as a defensive play caller has ebbed and flowed a bit over the years, but you could tell by the personnel they brought in, led by Legarius Sneed this last offseason, that they were going to be a team that wanted to get in your grill. They wanted to invade the personal space of the opposing wide receiver and throw off the timing of the passing attack. So I felt like from a coverage perspective, my evaluation is that Caleb, I think, did an effective job knowing what he was looking at, what he was seeing coverage-wise, but having DBs just right there in the hip pocket of receivers and having a pass rush that was getting home against his front five, those were the elements to me that seemed to throw Caleb Williams off kilter, because the coverage on a consistent basis, the coverage from Tennessee didn't strike me as that confusing, but you did have guys who were rerouting Bears wideouts. There were open opportunities, and that's a part of why you play man coverage. You know at times you're going to let a DB get behind you, but when you get up into their grill and you reroute them when they're trying to get that release, you are counting on that pass rush. Whether it's just your front four, you add a little bit of pressure like Wilson started to do to that Bears pass protection in half number two, start to heat things up with a little delayed pressure here and there, you're counting on folks to get home. And even if they don't sack the quarterback, you want him to be a little bit rattled. You pressure a quarterback either mentally or physically. I felt like the mental pressure on Caleb was there more so than the physical duress, and that's a part of what was forcing him to hold the football, because he knew what he was looking at, but he wasn't confident whether or not it was the right spot to try to fit the football into. And so even when Bears receivers were open at times, you saw some inaccuracies that crept into it. So it'll be, I would imagine, a really fruitful film for him, for Kerry Joseph, for Shane Waldron to go back and evaluate and say, yeah, my eyes were in some pretty good places here. Those are passes I can make. I just got to be more consistent with the execution.
No score first quarter, and Caleb Williams takes a 19-yard loss on that sack. What did you see, and what will he learn from that tape?
So the 19-yard sack was intriguing, because I'm not completely sure what exactly they were looking to execute there, because you saw the entire offensive line moving in unison. So it had the look to me of them trying to set up some sort of a throwback screen where from a defensive eye perspective, when you see the entire O-line moving in unison rapidly in one direction, you're trying to get the eyes of the defensive front seven, and at times the secondary too, but you want the defense, because the defenders are going to be trained to use the offensive line as their key, because more frequently than not, the O-line is taking you to where the ball's going to go. They want the big ugly guys to be out there blocking you at whatever the point of attack ends up being on that individual play. So if you're behind Caleb and you're looking out at the defense, so you're looking at the quarterback's vantage point, the entire O-line moves left immediately at the snap of the football. They're trying to draw the defense in that direction. Caleb begins to move in that direction. You get some initial penetration right there off the snap, and then, you know, whatever it was, sort of a jet protection kind of look where between Coleman Shelton, Nate Davis. They're both moving to their left, and you get immediate penetration into the backfield from the Titans' defensive tackle. Now, whose definitive responsibility is it? It's usually that guard. When you have a defender who's lined up more shaded over the center, as the Titans were in that formation, and he works through the shoulder of the center between that A-gap, the center guard gap, it's normally, with the way that protection looks, the guard should take that defender over. Nate Davis did not do that. In reaction, Coleman Shelton ends up reacting like, oh, maybe this, I should have had more presence in this gap. So he reverse pivots, spins around, and he's trying to pick up that defender. So it was somewhere between Shelton and Davis. My impression is that the expectation would have been for Davis to pick that guy up. However that works out, you get quick penetration, and Caleb just starts kind of spinning around in the backfield. It seemed like the way it's looking, he should have been more lateral, but for some reason, Caleb is still in the pocket. He should have been working sideways more. And then he just kind of spun around over and over again, trying to evade some defenders, and takes this 19-yard sack. So the quick penetration, yes, when you're working in that jet sort of movement, that's going to happen sometimes. When you get a defensive tackle with a great get-off, it's going to be hard to overtake that guy sometimes, but that's the responsibility of the interior of the offensive line. They lost that battle. They didn't get that done. And then Caleb just starts to run backwards more and more, and it ends up being this sack. Fortunately, if it were Will Levis, that might have been a turnover. So I guess credit to Caleb in his first start, where he didn't make a bad play much, much worse.
How did you feel how the offensive line played overall?
Bad. They were bad. The Titans have a really good D-line. There's no doubt about that, especially on the inside. You've got guys who can bring both power and finesse, which can at times be sort of a rare combination, especially, you know, for some of the young football players they have, you know, like Tavondre Sweat at his size, to be able to apply force into the blocker, and then you get the guy starting to settle down. So you've shown him all that immense mass and power you have, and then you can start to work violent hands. Like, he did that to Tevin Jenkins a couple of times, you know, understandably, because of the concern that's been there for the Bears center position. Coleman Shelton takes good amount of heat. Nate Davis has been taking all kinds of heat, but Ryan Bates rotates in. He's seemingly trying to play with like 1.5 arms right now. He wasn't using his left arm or left hand very effectively. He gets bowled over a few times. Nate Davis gets run by a few times. Coleman Shelton gets run by. Tevin Jenkins wasn't great in that game either. Braxton Jones, we know the power rush because of his sort of tall, lean, angular build. That's the scouting report on Braxton Jones, you know, pretty much every game, regardless of opponent. They're going to test him with power. He's gotten better at it throughout his career, but you know, sometimes you're going to get bull rushed on occasion. So he certainly gave up some heat into the pocket as well. So not a good game overall up front from the Bears offensive line. And, you know, did Caleb do enough to sort of get them out of jeopardy? No. Did Shane Waldron do enough to get them out of jeopardy? I don't believe that was the case either, but individual to individual across that front five, front six, when you talk about the rotation at right guard, it wasn't a good game for the guys up front.
Usually, when you see a lot of passes get batted at the line, it's because the offensive line is actually playing well. The reason being, when guys are blocked and not getting through,
they put their hands up.
Internal clock is, boy, I'm blocked, at least I'm going to put my hands up. And I understand that, and some coaches will say, hey, that usually means we're doing a good job in pass pro. I'm not sure that was the case. How troubled were you by some of the low-angled throws that were coming out?
So it's not something that's been a consistent problem for Caleb Williams in his career arc up until now, but this is his very first NFL game, so things can become a problem at the professional level that haven't been problems before. But one of the areas he's usually been effective in is kind of working to find windows. You know, like Drew Brees is shorter than Caleb is, but Drew Brees was really effective within the pocket at finding throwing windows. And it wasn't consistently from actually even adjusting his arm angle, but the timing of the pass, the rhythm that it's coming out in, fitting it into windows, not only at the second and third level through coverage, but through where the offensive line, where the pass rush dictates that the ball has an opportunity to travel through. Drew Brees was always really effective in that regard, and he usually just kept that sort of traditional overhead arm action. Caleb has been, up to this point as an amateur athlete, effective at finding throwing windows both in the pocket and, of course, on the move as well. So I'm not troubled by it yet, but, you know, a lot more of the deflected balls at the line of scrimmage happened as the half wore on. Like, the ball popped up into the air several times. Some of those were also in the secondary, though, too. So I think that even enhances the impression we have of how many times defenders were knocking the ball down. There were, I want to say, two or three at the line of scrimmage. There were also a couple in the secondary, like that Roma Dunze grab on that weird moment. You know, that's a pass that's deflected in the secondary. So I'm, at this point, I'm more concerned about just Caleb's inaccuracy on the whole in situations where he can see it, he read it adequately, but he's throwing it behind Roma Dunze a little bit here or there, throwing it behind Keenan Allen a little bit, leading DeAndre Swift a little bit too much at times, just putting the ball to the player that it should be intended towards, but not putting it on the numbers, not putting it in a position where they're going to make the reception cleanly and keep their momentum working up the field. When Shane Waldron is trying to call him into some of these short and intermediate quick game sort of throws with drags concepts and crossing routes and mesh routes that should allow him versus man coverage to put the ball on his playmaker and allow them to be creative after the grab, that's where Caleb struggled yesterday. The batted down balls at the line of scrimmage, it's not something I've seen him deal with a lot before. So my radar isn't up on that too much, you know, by comparison.
I'll have to keep watching. I mean, I literally had a conversation with Drew Brees about this a few years ago, because it always amazed me that even at 5'11", probably, with Drew Brees, that he would get all of the 5'11 into a throw. And we went through, and I like even demonstrated, it's like, I feel like I'm watching you throw from your tiptoes sometimes. And he says, I kind of am. And he would extend all the way up to release the ball, just the way that Ann is talking about. Caleb, because he can kind of matrix the ball a little bit and wrap it around a defender, I do worry, because he's not, you know, 6'5 or what, and it happens to the guys that are 6'5 too.
Right.
How often can you do that and not pay a penalty for it? That there might be times where Caleb has to go over the top and make those throws.
And some of it is feel-based. You know, a lot of the guys who don't experience many batted passes, like, you know, Kyler Murray, he's been in the league for a handful of years now. We don't spend a lot of time talking about Kyler Murray getting passes batted down consistently, but one of the things that Arizona does with Kyler Murray, he takes a deeper drop. And yes, he is more likely to even begin scrambling. Like, a lot of quarterbacks are either vertical escape guys, where they'll climb vertically into the pocket, looking to extend the play and keep their eyes down the field. Some guys are more so lateral escape guys. Like, Justin Fields has always been more of a lateral escape guy, and just in trying to enhance his more traditional QB mechanics, he's tried to get to the point where he's willing to move forward and advance on the defense before looking to throw the football. With Caleb, you know, we'll see exactly what he is, whether he's more vertical or horizontal in his escape path. But Kyler Murray, he's willing to run backwards, he'll reverse pivot, he'll run all over the place, extending the play. And it does look like this sort of, you know, charismatic, oddball circus kind of thing. Sometimes he makes it work, sometimes he doesn't. It gets really frustrating for defenders. It gets really frustrating at times for his teammates as well, because it's inconsistent in its rhythm and its timing. But I think, you know, for Caleb, I'm more worried about the fact that the Bears faced man coverage. You got a receiver core who theoretically should be able to win. We saw a number of examples where they did win, and Caleb was missing those passes, either overthrowing multiple times or just being a little bit off on the back shoulder that leads to a pass deflection, or the back hip, as opposed to hitting that guy between the numbers, letting him catch it in stride and keeping him on the move.
This segment with Anthony Herron is sponsored by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Visit online or their Elmhurst and Lyle showrooms. We've got more to come with Anthony Herron. Want to talk about the positive play of lineman Daryl Taylor, who had a couple of sacks and looks like he may be a fortuitous acquisition.
Let's talk orbit motion, too.
A lot of stuff to discuss. Ooh, sexy football coming up with Anthony Heron when we come back on The Score.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yell.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Here it comes. Great blitz pick up by Spears, but that gets knocked away from Levis by Darrell Taylor. Loose ball. And out of the pack, it looked like Edwards recovered it. It is Chicago ball inside the Tennessee 35.
Already worth the trade.
Yeah, 100%.
Already, you won that trade.
Immediately.
Even if he just disappears right now, or Thanos snaps his fingers and he's turns into powder, you won that trade.
What if you get 10 sacks out of him?
Mark Anderson.
Like, you don't feel as bad about the Judon thing, you know, because Ryan Poles was saying how he'd feel sick if Judon had 20 sacks. What if you get out of this, you get...
What if you get 8?
It helped you win a game already.
You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Bernstein and Holmes, 10 to 2, Monday through Friday here on Sports Radio 670. And on our Football Mondays, we talk to Anthony Heron, which is what we are doing right now. What did you think of the recently acquired edge rusher's performance?
So the very first third down of the game, when they had 52 on one edge and 98 on the other edge, and 52 turned the corner and didn't hit Will Levis, but just exploded out of his stance with an energy and a level of juice that's just different from the other edge rushers the Bears deploy. I didn't even know what Daryl Taylor's number was. I had no idea what jersey he was wearing coming into the game. But I just see the dude get out of his stance. I'm like, all right, so I know Austin Booker's number, but I don't know who's going to be the first one to sub in their sub package. So I see a 52 turn in the corner. I'm thinking, all right, so either Austin Booker changed his jersey number, which that even that didn't move like Austin Booker. That moved like somebody who has rushed the quarterback in an NFL game before. Man, I hope that's Daryl Taylor. So I start thumbing through, and I'm swiping on the website. Like, yes, that is Daryl Taylor. If he can look like that on a consistent basis, the Bears are in business. And they got even more out of him versus the run than I anticipated. I'm thinking this guy's coming in situational, third down guy, and his very first rush of the game, the way he came out with an explosive first step that covers a lot of ground, and he's got that flat back and works directly into the outside lever of that offensive tackle and then keeps his mechanics going because he's committed to the edge rush. But when the blocker engages him, Daryl Taylor doesn't just kind of settle for that guy leaning on his shoulder. He goes back to chest to back to chest over and over again and keeps his levers moving and violent and can maintain low pad level while doing it. It's really difficult to continue chasing a pass rusher who's able to keep that level of pad level and activity while he's turning the corner, and he showed a lot of that in the very first rush he stepped onto the field. So I'm looking to try to figure out who that is. And when it was Daryl Taylor, I breathed a sigh of relief because that's one of the elements the Bears have been missing. Now, I don't know if the dude's going to a Pro Bowl or not, but that's something that shows up on film. It flashes in that way. So Montez Sweat is still going to get chipped and doubled on a consistent basis after the season he put together last year. But Daryl Taylor can win one-on-one. And if he shows up with that kind of verve and zest every time he steps onto the field,
what about
for the Bears,
vim and vigor?
Oh, man, if he brings the vigor on a weekly basis, then you can take it to the bank, man. A big sack season is on the way because he is going to see a bunch of one-on-one matchups.
That wasn't my favorite thing on the Bears defensive line yesterday.
No, oh, big, big fella.
My favorite thing was Andrew Billings beating the hell out of Peter Skoronski. Snap after snap.
Why do you hate Peter Skoronski?
I don't hate him.
You hate Skoronski.
I was
you
big,
probably hate Studzinski too.
I was a big fan of him in Northwestern, even in the draft conversation, but Andrew Billings beat that man to death. Sweet love was made to Peter Skoronski yesterday by the big fella, and I appreciated it.
And it wasn't only on rundowns. And I know a lot of times, what you know, somebody just you know sees either big guy, they hear someone as one of the best linemen in football, and they just kind of assume that every aspect of their game is dominant. But Andrew Billings, when he joined up with the Bears going into last season, he wasn't thought of as an exceptional pass rusher early in the season. He didn't show a lot of pass rush penetration into the backfield. His game improved in that regard throughout the season last year. And now coming into this season, first game of the year, not only was he impactful against blocks, but in some passing downs, we saw Andrew Billings getting into the backfield, getting to the edge of blockers and being really effective in that manner. Bears defensive front as a whole, I don't view it as all their problems being solved, but the first game out of the books with against an offensive line where that team has spent some draft capital and free agent capital over the last couple of seasons here to put a good, formidable group together, I thought it was a matchup that the Bears D-line would be challenged and tested by. And schematically, Tennessee did some really effective things running the football early, but I didn't necessarily put a lot of the ill fits in the Bears run on the D-line early in the game. And then as the game wore on, and especially in the second half, when the game starts to near cold crust depth and you got to be able to lean on some aspect of your team, the Bears D-line was really impactful throughout. So I thought for the first time out here, for the first game of the season, with a lot of that youth and inexperience that we're still hoping to see growth from, yes, Andrew Billings was exceptional. Javon Dexter had some really nice moments as well. Talked to you guys about his pad level a good bit. There were some really nice looks at Javon Dexter using exceptional pad level for his size, getting into blockers for run fits initially and then converting into a pass rusher, getting rid of those guys. There was some good tape out there being shown by the Bears D-line.
Were my eyes deceiving me, or did I see Andrew Billings at times lined up on the outside shoulder of the guard in what we would call a three technique?
You did. And I'm wondering, I'm wondering what the purpose was for, because it happened. It happened pretty frequently in the game with Billings and Dexter in the game together, where at least last season, Billings was your nose. And he was the guy playing, you know, shade on the center on a consistent basis. And then the other guys would kind of, you know, flop to either three technique. This season, at least this first game, that's not what the Bears did. Now, is it? And in my mind, I'm not convinced that Jervon Dexter is the style of three technique that Matt Eberflus would maybe value most in this scheme, because he's not a guy with the consistent suddenness, like that burst out of the stance I was just describing from Daryl Taylor that some teams and a number of guys do have on the interior of their D-line. He's not necessarily a really sudden player in that regard, but he can take up space, he can eat up blocks, he can penetrate, and he's showing that he can get into the backfield and make some plays here. So is it, hey, let's give Jervon Dexter some looks over the nose as well. We've seen Billings start to develop his ability to penetrate as well. So just make them interchangeable. You don't have to have Dexter as the three technique consistently. You can just have them play left and right. You can have a preferred matchup at times and allow them to decide, or just go into each individual game plan and say that we're good, whoever's the nose, whoever's the three, and you can sort of, you know, have that interspersed throughout the game, just sort of depending on what the situation calls for. So I like that versatility. We know the Bears plan to move Montez Sweat around as more of a movable chess piece and use, or at least I guess sort of force more versatility into his game, so it's more difficult for the pass protection to get a bead on where he'll align and how they try to account for him. And it seems like some of that's playing out on the interior as well. And I think for the most part, they handled it really well yesterday.
I think I've made up my mind after watching one weekend of football. If I'm a head coach, we're not going to mess around with this. Kick the ball out of the back of the end zone. Okay. I'll trust our defense to hold it down from the 30 and have them do their job. I just think that while it was exciting and it was helpful for the Bears yesterday, I think there are so many things that you have to keep in mind with this new kickoff that I'd rather just go, we'll kick it out of bounds and play D.
I think when it comes down to it, there's going to be different coaches who have their own specific philosophy on that. You know, Matt Eberflus, and especially with as much influence as it seems, Richard Hightower, his special teams coordinator, he's a guy who's trusted, a guy who's been in the league for a long time. He seems to have a big voice and a big presence in decisions that get made there, as he should. And between Flus being a defensive guy and the faith he has in Richard Hightower, then, you know, I think the Bears feel pretty good about the idea of being able to pin the opponent down by covering that kick well. So I think that philosophically will be something that's probably going to be inconsistent across the league, depending on the approach of the head coach. If it's a head coach that says, I'm better off just making sure they don't pick up chunk yardage and get easy points because I trust my offense to outscore them anyway, then some teams may have a philosophy on that. But teams who say, we're going to benefit, not only will my defense benefit from us pinning that opponent down, but my offense, you know, if we can almost treat it like a punt and pin situation where we get them starting their drive at the 10-yard line or in, and then also now our defense takes the field, we get a three and out, they punt, we get exceptional field position like DeAndre Carter kept giving the Bears offense over and over again.
He's a real returner.
Kind of vomiting away.
That's what a real returner
looks like,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's what you're hoping for when someone gets a punt or a kick, you know, kicked to them, punted to them.
Get a first down. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yes, yes, and he did that. And so for the Bears, where they know they got a rookie quarterback, and until the offense proves otherwise, that field position matters for the Bears. So I can understand Eberflus, at least for now, taking that approach to say, let's see if we can take advantage of the opportunity to pin the team down.
While we're talking small victories, the Bears won the toss, and Matt Eberflus deferred. So maybe that was just something he did last year for whatever reason.
You realize it actually worked out well for him last year.
Yeah,
it
may have, but it still doesn't. But with a large enough sample, it doesn't. It's just objective. So I would hope that somebody maybe said, all right, whatever that was last year, it's enough. Let's do it the way we're supposed to do it now.
Early in the season last year, he was deferring, and they were losing. And then as the season wore on, now, you know, it's very anecdotal.
It's still the right thing to do.
Deferring, and they started winning.
But it's not causal.
In the midst
of all
that's
like his haircut or growing a beard.
Yes, he has a beard, and now he's 1-0 coaching in the NFL with a beard. So Matt Eberflus is likely to continue coaching with a beard until evidence tells him otherwise. But last season, I think there is some nuance to this, though, because I'm not even completely clear what the numbers actually say about that. Like, Flus addressed that with the media at some point late in the season. He said, I haven't seen any numbers that say if you defer that you win more often than not anyway. But even if I grant that, deferring leads to more wins, last season what I actually liked was that he was doing it the sort of by the book way early, and then he said, let me get my offense on the field at first, get them that opportunity to take the field, get into our scripted plays early. If we have some good vibes, if we actually put some points on the board right off the bat, it seems to have helped the defense. Our quarterback has more confidence early in the game. And that did play out for a little while with the Bears. So he adjusted and stuck with that. Eberflus strikes me as a guy that knows the numbers, likes to ride with the numbers, but still will occasionally just trust the moment within the game, like some of these fourth downs that he does and doesn't go for, or decision like taking the ball or deferring. A lot of those things that he seems to know and respect the numbers and the metrics on, he's still willing to make some gut calls, and I kind of respect that.
What do offenses hope to gain with orbit motion?
When you do motion in general, but especially using orbit motion, you're trying to generate either of a couple of different things. You want to generate leverage on the opposing defense, or you want to generate information. So when you use standard motion, or when you use jet motion where the guy's running, like sprinting directly behind the quarterback, when you use orbit motion allows you a legal opportunity to generate momentum pre-snap. Whereas, you know, jet motion, yeah, you can be running laterally and sideways, but you don't have the possibility of any sort of downhill approach from that player who's going in motion. Whereas orbit motion working, and just to be clear, and you described this earlier in the show, orbit motion meaning when the player operates from, you know, essentially when he gets to the hip of the tight end at the edge of the formation or the offensive tackle and begins to work backwards into the backfield behind the quarterback, behind the running back, there's an opportunity now at the snap of the football. He can't be moving forward at the snap, but as he's beginning to work backwards, now there's a threat on that opposing defense. The threat is this going to be a pass receiver that works up the field while he's at a full dead sprint? Or is this someone who's maybe even going to become a ball carrier who can get the ball behind the line of scrimmage in quick fashion and have momentum moving forward? So that individual path of the orbit motion allows a different type of momentum where now, as long as you haven't snapped it when that player is moving forward, you get all kinds of momentum that can be generated from that player who starts off looping back, like in the arena football.
I was just going to say loop motion that you and right. I had plenty of experience with in the AFL, yep. Where I think that was called very liberally as far as relative to the actual line of scrimmage that guy was, because they wanted it to be completed to him. But a defensive back had no chance against that.
No, it made life really difficult. And yes, you could be moving forward. You just supposedly weren't supposed to be allowed beyond the line of scrimmage at the snap of the football in the Arena Football League.
But sometimes it happens.
By rule, yes, yeah. It definitely happens sometimes. But orbit motion, you'll still see the defense at times. They'll just make a very slight adjustment as the player starts to work from one side of the formation to the other. At times, you'll see this chaotic, you know, sort of movement where the defense will move and trade gap responsibilities at the second level, at the third level. But it's all in not only generating leverage for that football player who's looping behind the backfield, but you're generating information as well. But the information you generate can dictate whether or not you're going to utilize that momentum that the player can develop as he starts to approach the line of scrimmage after you snap it.
Big Ann, as always, we appreciate you. Thanks so much.
All right, fellas, be good.
That's Anthony Heron, who is a staple of our football coverage. When we come back, let's drill down a bit on an area, frankly, of major concern that should not be, that still is.
Yep.
With your undefeated Chicago Bears next on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Williams under pressure. That is a big man chasing him. And Williams unable Sebastian Joseph Day.
There was no miscommunication. I believe that their D lineman just busted through the block that we had for him and then created the pressure there. I know Caleb tried to get rid of it, you know, because we were in the kick line there. I think we just went for a fourth down before that, I believe. But yeah, he's got to do a good job of getting rid of that if he can. But again, I thought the D lineman made a nice play.
They still haven't fixed the center position. Guard, center, guard was bad all day. Fix it. This is an exchange with someone who watches line play very closely. This is an experienced veteran NFL observer.
Okay.
With whom I was texting yesterday. And this person has done all kinds of scouting before and just says, what a debacle. Poles' inability to fortify the interior offensive line in his time here is inexcusable. Shelton is unbelievably bad. It's hard to put into words how bad he's been today. It's scary considering Poles' and Cunningham's background.
I would agree. And it feels like you fixated on Bates and like the rotation of Bates out there, and he's not quite right
yet.
You
fixated on what Bates was.
Was, right. Not what he is. And you probably got the fourth or fifth best center that was available in free agency this year, in a year where there were a lot of good centers that were available. I do wonder if this is just there's two monsters that they had to deal with yesterday at the defensive tackle spots. Maybe they look better next week. I don't know.
I mean, DeVondre Sweat is a large man. Yeah, he's a big, angry man.
They dealt with some real dudes yesterday. But when you see them getting pancaked, when you see the ball being snapped, and I was half expecting Kales to be like, oh my God, because that's what it felt like. It felt like Aaron Donald was on the other side and when he was just looking to assault the quarterback. But yes.
Third down. Pressure comes late.
Yeah. That's what it felt like a little bit yesterday watching the Bears offensive line. And I am surprised because it wasn't just in the pass game. It was in the run game too yesterday that the Bears weren't effective enough in their run game.
It's amazing that they could win a game where most of the game they lost the line of scrimmage.
Yes. Go back to that stat. Of all of the plays that they had, 51.2% of those plays were either zero gain or a negative play.
It's amazing.
It's hard to win football games that way. They did. And they deserve credit. But yes, you would expect that it's weird that that's something that he can't get right. And there's a part of me that goes, you wonder if this is one of those things where he's looking for himself. And you go, are you looking for the guy that
he was bad,
tries hard? Or are you looking for the talented guy?
I want both.
I agree with you.
Can I have the talented guy that tries hard?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's Tevin Jenkins would be the talented guy that tries hard.
But has his own inconsistencies.
Of course. But he's a talented guy who tries hard. And then you went out and identified a player whose reputation was not great from a football character standpoint in Nate Davis.
There's one guy in the line I don't think about, and that's Darnell Wright. I'm good at right tackle. Everybody else, I'm not sure I trust.
I think that that's a fair way to look at the Bears offensive line.
And it's not okay.
And it's fair for any Bears fan to go, well, wait, wasn't that supposed to be fixed by now? Yes, it was. Isn't this Ryan Poles' supposed specialty? Yes, it's supposed to be. You have two guys running your football operation that played offensive line. They have struggled to find consistent offensive line play. Maybe that means they're not good at scouting their own position.
Part of it is that, and part of it, as Olin Krutz has pointed out for years now, is resources. and the amount that you decide that you are going to allot for a certain position. And it may just be their philosophy that they don't think it's worth spending on interior line. But they did. The one time they did, it's somebody that they don't seem to trust.
They clearly don't trust, because you have a guy that's still a little bit injured that or coming back from injury, and you rotated from a fully healthy guy to a guy that's coming back from injury. And whether that messes up timing or whatever, they might not think it's a big deal. But if you have to rotate your guard in and out, that doesn't look good for either one of them.
Unless the goal is to use this as an extended tryout, and then within the next couple games, they just say, hey, this is what we're rolling with.
Well, Bates said in the post game that, hell yeah, he thinks he looks at it as competition, as he should. Nate Davis shouldn't feel comfortable at all. But I will say that part of the problem is that there's a couple dudes on scholarship, it feels like. And he's one of them. Like, you made that choice and you're sticking by it. You made that choice with Velas and you're sticking by it.
Now we'll get to that. We've set aside time to discuss the Velas conundrum and all that it represents, especially after Poles was trolling people on Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Like, you're that guy. It's like, he's alive. He's alive.
Yeah, your guy's alive and punting the ball.
He's alive and bad. Alive and kicking, right? Huh? See?
I see what you did there.
See?
This probably means it's time for a break. When we come back, we're going to let you hear from Caleb Williams. How did he view his first start? You'll hear from the Bears QB next here on The Score.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.